And now may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be pleasing and acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. This past spring, I was hiking with a friend up above Peterson Creek, met here in the church parking lot, and then went down and then went way back up again. Now, like many young adults, this friend was raised in the church, and like many young adults, church is no longer a real significant part of his life. During our conversation, we talked about work, and we talked about money, and we eventually talked about faith. As we were climbing up the hill back towards the church and our cars, we started talking about the Bible and all those stories we remembered from our childhood. He remarked, I think pointedly, "The Bible seems to raise as many questions as it answers." The Bible seems to raise as many questions as it answers. This seemed to me to be at least one of the reasons that my friend was no longer connected to church. Now, you might take issue with his statement. I mean, for many of us, Scripture is a source of guidance and great consolation and comfort. But you've got to admit, if you've done any Bible reading, that he was on to something. I mean, if you are looking for simple, pat answers to big questions, maybe Christianity isn't for you. Just consider today's passage on discernment. Take that opening statement, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged." Some of us hear this statement and we inwardly shout, "Hooray! You go, Jesus!" We are tired of people offering their opinions about our child rearing, or our purchases, or our recycling. We are tired of the free advice we get on our eating and drinking, our likes and our loves. "You go, Jesus. People shouldn't judge me. It's none of their business." But then keep on reading. When we read a little further, the same passage goes on to make all sorts of judgments. I mean, people are called dogs. People are labeled pigs. In the section we skipped over, there's a warning about wolves in sheep's clothing, and then talk about good trees and bad trees, good fruit and bad fruit. Some of us hear this, and we inwardly shout, "Hooray! You go, Jesus! We are tired of people saying everything is good. We can't celebrate everything that others find pleasant, their ways of eating or drinking, their likes or their loves. You go, Jesus. Call it as you see it. We can't label bad things good." Confused yet? I mean, if you only read part of each passage, you'd just be confirmed in your own position. But if you listen to the whole passage together, you might find yourself a little confused and bewildered. Is Jesus downright rejecting a judgment of others, or is he wholeheartedly embracing it? Now, some people would argue that our English translations have made a mistake, that they have complicated our reading. They would argue that judge is better rendered as condemned. That is, Jesus has nothing against us scrutinizing others, but would prohibit us from damning others. Well, it's worth trying out, right? But this goes a little distance in resolving the tension in the passage. I mean, calling someone a dog or a wolf in sheep's clothing, at least in my mind, is equivalent to cursing them. At the same time, it fails to explain why Luke, in his gospel, chooses an entirely different Greek word to speak about condemnation. In the same passage, he speaks about judging. So, back to the same problem we had at the beginning. What on earth is Jesus saying? Well, maybe a better approach would be to recognize that, like the Proverbs, the statement, "Do not judge or you will be judged," is not meant as a moral absolute. I mean, think about other proverbs. Start children off on the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it. Right? Good rule of thumb, good principle, but no guarantee, and not a means by which we should be judging other people's parenting. As an aside, if you think, for example, that the golden rule might be a moral absolute, then consider how someone might use that to justify holding wild parties. I mean, I like it when others do it for me, I might as well do it for others. Or when people decide not to report poaching, I sure wouldn't want someone to report on me, so I won't report on them, right? There's sort of a length or extent that these rules can go, but we can overgeneralize them. Realizing that "do not judge" is not an absolute seems sanctioned by the immediate context. I mean, Jesus allows for the possibility that a person may indeed remove a speck from their brother's eye, despite the earlier warning. Now, if we take this approach to the passage, to Jesus' first statement, I think we can discern at least a couple clear takeaways, okay? I think if we take that proverbial approach to Jesus' first statement, I think there's at least two things we can mine from this passage. The first takeaway, which seemingly counters that opening statement, is that it is necessary. It is absolutely necessary to exercise your judgment as a follower of Jesus. Now, just imagine with me, you notice someone lurking in your backyard, right? Lights go on, you see someone out there, what on earth is going on? Call 911, the police show up at your front door, you tell them what's going on, and they say to you, "Well, to each his own," or, "Who am I to judge?" Most of us would be pretty angry with them, right? They are there to judge and make judgments. Or imagine another scenario. Imagine that a child or grandchild is thinking about getting laser eye surgery. Let's follow the imagery in the passage. Is thinking about getting laser eye surgery. They want to be an airline pilot. They tell you about this great deal that's being offered by this guy who operates out of his basement. Right? So would you keep quiet when you heard this idea? I mean, let's not judge here. No! You would certainly advise them to go somewhere else. You might even set up the appointment to go somewhere else. You might even pay for the surgery somewhere else. Jesus advises us, do not give dogs what is sacred, do not throw your pearls to pigs. To heed this advice, we need to recognize both what is prized and valuable, and we need to discern who is unfit and unworthy. Jesus' own words teach us that we can't be moral relativists. We need to make judgments about the behavior of ourselves and the behavior of others. We need to discern what is good and what isn't. That's the first takeaway. We need to judge. But there's another takeaway that you need to somehow keep in tension. At the same time, we need to recognize that when it comes to judging others, we need to be extremely careful. Let me say that again. When it comes to judging others, we need to be extremely careful. When Jesus noted that we will be measured according to the measure we use for others, he was doing more than just reminding us that others will hold us up to our own standards. He was insinuating that if you harshly judge others, you must expect to be judged harshly by the judge of all. Want an illustration of this? Just flip ahead a few chapters and read the parable of the unforgiving servant. Jesus makes it clear that those who have received mercy are expected to show mercy to others. But there are other reasons additional reasons to be careful in judging others. More than being merciful, any quick judgments threaten to reveal hypocrisy, and hypocrisy further reveals a lack of competence. I mean, ever get something in your eye? Maybe a bug or like a grain of sand, some sort of grit. Having the tiniest foreign object in your eye is something that is really hard to ignore and can sometimes be extremely painful. Well, imagine that you're out in your yard, maybe working the flower bed or mowing the lawn, and something gets in your eye. Lo and behold, your neighbor sees you struggling and offers to help you. Let me help you with that. Of course, you know that that neighbor is legally blind. So would you want their help? Of course not. Of course not. Despite the pain you're enduring trying to get it out, that piece of grit out yourselves, you know that if a blind man starts scraping your lens with a Q-tip or a finger, you're going to be in much worse condition pretty soon. You could say that he's ill-suited for the job. I think that's why some people run and hide when Christians want to help them with their problems. The would-be helper boasts about 25 years of marriage and talks proudly about fidelity, but no one sees that marriage as one they would like to emulate. Followers of Jesus should be careful about sharing their opinions. We need to make sure we see ourselves clearly before we start trying to help others. Otherwise, we will be seen as hypocrites, the hypocrites we are, and then be regarded as unfit to provide any assistance. Today's passage suggests that followers of Jesus, on the one hand, need to make judgment, but on the other hand, especially when it comes to others, they need to be very, very discerning. Maybe one rule of hand is that God's law is best applied to ourselves. That is, it works best as a mirror when judging our own thoughts and actions, but it is less helpful as a magnifying glass used to pour over the mistakes of others. True, there will be opportunities when we need to deal with sin. There will be times when we are required to judge others. To not do so would be a grave mistake. I mean, when we overlook destructive patterns, we are in fact enabling them. But any judgment of others needs to be done in light of the golden rule, that is, exercised with an overabiding concern for the person in question. And it can only be exercised by those who have first examined themselves. So there you go. You're thinking, wow, why did I come to church this morning? Not an easy passage, right? No simple application. Near the end of my hike with my friend, he asserted, "The Bible seems to raise as many questions as it answers." Underneath that statement lay an expectation that the Bible is supposed to provide simple answers to complex issues. Well, I'm not sure that the Bible is supposed to do that. I'm not sure the life of faith is supposed to be like that. I mean, let me take you back to an Old Testament passage. Think about Jacob, right? Jacob who stole his brother's inheritance and lived on the run. Well, at one point in his life, he had to confront that brother. And that brother was wealthy, powerful, strong. You may recall that the night before he met that brother again, after years apart, Jacob wrestled with God. We're not told why. We're not told what was the issue, but we're told that he wrestled with God. I think that wrestling with God could serve as a good image for the life of faith. It's maybe not the image we'd want or we would choose. I mean, life's hard enough. You have a hard week? Did you want to come here to wrestle with God? Well, keep in mind that while this wrestling with God kept Jacob up all night, and it marked him for the rest of his life, Jacob didn't leave without a blessing. Jacob left with a blessing and the assurance that this God would be with him. Well, may God give us the courage to follow Jesus with all our heart, our soul, our strength, and our mind. And though we too will struggle, may we also leave blessed. Thanks be to God. Amen.